This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on custody time limits. I am joined by Senior Barrister Simon Spence QC from Red Lion Chambers in London. Simon has successfully prosecuted and defended numerous very high profile complex murder cases and non-fatal violent offences for many years. He has extensive experience in the courtroom in sensitive and difficult sexual offence cases with a particular emphasis on child and vulnerable witnesses. Simon, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, custody time limits part one. I mean, it goes without saying that the COVID crisis has presented an unprecedented challenge for the criminal justice system in England and Wales. The scale and seriousness of the situation presents, you know, has presented significant difficulties to the criminal court process and means that the criminal justice system has not been able to operate in the way that it normally does. So let's start this conversation, Simon, by telling our listeners, what do we mean by custody time limits? What is meant by that, please?
Custody time limits is a framework whereby when somebody has been arrested and by the police and charged with an offence, the law requires them to be tried within a certain period of time. Obviously, some defendants are on bail, and so custody time limits don't apply. But for a lot of defendants who are charged with more serious offences, the sort of cases I deal with, then they're usually remanded in custody. And there's a conflict between the presumption of innocence, because anybody charged with a crime is presumed to be innocent until they're proved not to be, and keeping the public safe whilst they await their trial. And if somebody is presumed innocent, it would be quite wrong for them to be kept in custody indefinitely until their trial is heard. And so for people charged with the most serious offences, then from their first appearance in court to the start of their trial, that's the day the jury is empaneled to try them, it should be a maximum of 182 days.
Yeah.
And so in normal times, that is the system that applies.
Yes. And then on the 7th of April 2020, when we went into this crisis, which started on effectively on the 23rd of March with the first lockdown 2020, the coronavirus crisis protocol for the effective handling of custody time limits was published. And that was basically to say, you know, during the pandemic, in this exceptional situation that we find ourselves in, the Lord Chief Justice said, you know, we have to extend the custody time limits and look at that. So they basically added, from what I understand, by the time we got to the 6th of September 2020, temporarily extending custody time limits by 56 days to allow for defendants awaiting trial to be remanded in custody for up to 8 months. It's a long time.
It's a very long time. And the custody time limits haven't been thrown out of the window completely. They still apply. But what the law has said, in ordinary times with custody time limits, the prosecution have to establish that they've acted with all due diligence to get the case ready in time. And the court has to be satisfied that there's what's called a good and sufficient reason to extend the custody time limits. And what, in essence, the Lord Chief Justice has said is that the mere fact of the current pandemic is to be taken as good and sufficient cause to extend custody time limits. And we are experiencing, I'm afraid, cases where custody time limits are being extended very significantly indeed. Mm. To give you one example, I've got a murder case at the Old Bailey, which should have been heard in September. And the case has now gone off until June of next year.
Wow.
And the defendant is in custody. So, you know, there are going to be some cases where people are waiting a year, if not longer, for their trial.
Due to the pandemic and due to the delays and the backlog of the court system.
Well, absolutely. One of the complaints is that there isn't enough investment in opening up more courtrooms. Obviously, there were Nightingale hotels,
yes,
which were created, and sadly at the moment, with the rates going the way they are, they're going to be put back in use again. And there was talk about, I think they called them Blackstone courts, so they would be temporary court buildings to be used for cases. The problem with those, of course, is that if you're commandeering a theatre, which has happened in Salford, for example, it doesn't have the security features for defendants who are in custody.
Yes.
So the vast majority of temporary courts will be for bail cases and cases which are not likely to end in a custodial sentence if someone's convicted. And actually, the number of cases that fall into that category in the Crown Court is quite small.
Right. I mean, custody time limits can already be, you know, extended on an individual, you know, due to illness or absence or the need for separate trials or some other good or sufficient reason. But what we're saying here,
yes,
is that all custody time limits have to be extended because there is a backlog in being able to hear cases in the safe way that we have to now, where juries cannot sit next to each other, where a courtroom can't be structured in its normal way. But let's consider the recent increase to custody time limits and the implications in the context of these significant court backlogs. And why are custody time limits so important to the judicial system, Simon? I mean, why? I hear what you're saying, you know, it's to keep the public safe from a potentially dangerous individual. But why are they,
yes,
so important? Let's talk about that.
They're important because, as I mentioned earlier, it's quite wrong for the state to incarcerate somebody who has not been found guilty. That's the basic premise. That's the starting point. And that's why, under the Bail Act, there's a presumption of a right to bail. So the presumption is that you're entitled to have bail, albeit perhaps with conditions, unless the circumstances are so serious that somebody has to be remanded in custody. And once you've taken someone's liberty away from them, it should be for the shortest period of time possible until they are convicted by a jury. And so they're the two basic premises. If you're going to limit someone's freedom, it shouldn't be for any longer than is absolutely necessary. And that is why custody time limits are as important as they are.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's quite interesting because the legal burden of monitoring and complying with the custody time limits rests on the prosecution. So it has to be the prosecution's case, really, doesn't it? That the custody,
absolutely,
time limit needs to be extended in this case, you know, in particular cases, and why that has to happen. I mean, what are the recent developments with custody time limits? We've spoken about, you know, a big backlog here. You've you know, mentioned a case that you're working on that was due to be heard in September, and now it's put back to June. But have there been any other recent developments apart from the fact that, right, we are going to have to add 56 days onto the standard 182? What happens after that time if the case is still not heard?
Well, then the prosecution still have to make an application, and the twofold test that I mentioned about the prosecution having to show due diligence and there being good and sufficient cause, they remain the test for a court to apply. The difficulty is the pandemic isn't just causing difficulties for the courts, it's causing difficulties for the police. It's not as easy for the police to go out and investigate cases and arrest people in the way that it was. Their numbers are reduced because they have people off sick who have caught the virus. They are restricted as to the amount of human contact they can have with members of the public. And so it affects everything across the board. The police's work is more difficult to do, so they need longer to do it. The Crown Prosecution Service need longer to prepare the file and submit the case to the court. And then, when it does come to court, there's this huge backlog of cases waiting to be heard. And so it's a bit like a snowball rolling down a mountain, if you like. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's just
because the problem doesn't go away.
Absolutely. And I was just going to say that it's just not one element that actually amounts to the fact that a custody time limit has to be increased. It's all the elements that make up the case. It could
Absolutely.
Be the lawyers for either side, you know, not,
yeah.
not as you say, not having the information and the documentation ready to be able to hear or try the case. So it's a whole host of information that has to come together that, and I say it, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, as you've mentioned, it stems from the police being able to do their work, to the legal teams being able to do their work, to the court being available. You know, so I don't. It's extraordinary because it's just not one element that has resulted in somebody who's potentially not guilty being held in custody for a lot longer than what the law says they can be held in custody for. Until they can hear their trial. But what happens if somebody says, well, I don't agree that my custody time limit should be increased? I don't, maybe because they believe and they think and they say, well, I'm because I'm innocent or I've done my time. You know, I've spent a year waiting for this trial or 2 years now, however long it can be. Can they appeal the decision that has been made to extend their custody time limit?
No, they can't. And that's one of the criticisms made of the system. It used to be the case that if you were refused bail by a Crown Court judge, you could appeal. When I started at the bar, it was quite a good source of income for junior barristers to go off to the High Court appealing bail refusals. That appeal system was withdrawn some years ago. And so once a Crown Court judge has made a decision that somebody is going to remain in custody,
that's
unless
it.
There's a significant change of circumstances, that decision stands. And so it does present a problem. Having said which, the courts are being creative and imaginative. And so you perhaps are finding people being granted bail with very strict conditions, where in normal times, they may be remanded in custody. What a lot of people don't appreciate is that people can be tried in their absence. And the House of Lords, before the Supreme Court was created, decided a case that made it much simpler for the prosecution to proceed in someone's absence. So if someone's granted bail and then chooses not to attend their trial, it's not going to hold the system up because the trial will proceed in that person's absence.
Yes.
Now, obviously, it increases the chance of them being convicted, but you've then got to get them back from wherever they've gone to be sentenced. And that does create an awful lot of additional work. But I think judges are being more creative about bail. The other thing that is happening is there's a system based on a decision called the Queen and Goodyear, whereby a defendant can ask a judge for an indication on sentence. And if somebody is facing the prospect of a long delay to their trial and they're in custody, then it's quite often worth saying to a judge, if you're charged with an offence that's not as serious as the sort of cases I deal with, saying, well, look, rather than sit in custody for 8 months awaiting my trial, if I plead guilty, what sentence will you give me? And the judge can refuse to answer that question, or he can say, well, I'm only going to give you 6 months anyway. And so the defendant then has the choice as to whether to wait for his trial or to plead guilty and serve his time and then come out.
Right. Well, very interesting stuff. I mean, if you can't... I was just going to say, the next thing I was going to say is who pays for the costs of any appeal? If you know, if somebody's privately funding their representation, the appeal of a custody time limit being extended. But if they can't appeal, then there's no costs to even been incurred. But in September 2020... it was reported that Judge H.H.J. Raynor at the Crown Court lodged a complaint against the resident judge of the Woolwich Crown Court, suggesting that political interference in the handling of cases involving extended custody time limits had taken place, and he felt pressured to extend the custody time limit of an individual who was being held in custody due to the backlog in cases that are being heard. Can you tell us a bit more about that, please?
Well, it certainly grabbed the headlines. I don't know that judge personally myself, although I'm familiar with his name. It comes back to this tension between money being available for things and prioritising matters as a matter of politics. Clearly, the top priority for the government with this pandemic has to be the National Health Service, and rightly so. But also, they have to invest in other aspects of society, which are perhaps less popular, less high profile. And the criminal justice system is one of those areas. And I think the point the judge was making is that the government is perhaps not prioritising the criminal justice system, expecting it to cope with the resources available to it at the moment. And the simple fact is, it can't. Now, this goes back long before coronavirus. There have been complaints about underinvestment in the criminal justice system.
Well, the legal aid system, years. You just have to look at what's happened to that and the
Absolutely.
Availability of funds for, you know, for legal aid.
Quite. And the same is true of the police. The same is true of the Crown Prosecution Service, for high street solicitors. It goes across the board. And the trouble is, once you've got a system which has been squeezed and squeezed, when something unexpected comes along that puts massive pressure on it, it can't cope. Now, that is really, I think, the point that the judge was making. And it is pretty apparent to quite a lot of us who work in the criminal justice system that the government are not investing sufficiently in expecting the system to cope. And the fact is, it's not coping. And that is why the backlog is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Because, of course, the backlog was rising before coronavirus came along. When there was the first lockdown, the courts were closed for many weeks.
Yes.
Crimes were still being committed, and anecdotally, it looked as if the crime rate was going up, particularly in relation to things like domestic violence, because when people are locked down together, sadly, that's one of the consequences. And so it wasn't just clearing the old backlog, it was clearing the new backlog that was being created by the courts being
closed. And then adding to it all.
And of course, the courts still aren't operating to the full extent that they should be, because many bigger trials, and I'm in the middle of one at the moment, is having to use two courtrooms to affect social distancing.
Yes. Well, I've been, you know, and so, I have trials that are being held in across three courtrooms even, where,
absolutely.
You know, they've had to use all the facilities on one floor of a courthouse because
there's no
other way to do it.
And of course, you have to limit the number of people coming into a building at any given time. Because the way the courts operate, people are in close proximity to each other. There's no way of avoiding it. And if that can't happen, then by definition, you have to reduce the number of people in the building. And that reduces the number of cases that can be heard.
No, indeed. Well, I mean, it's a very, very interesting subject. And it is, I can see why there's so much tension around it, because you're talking about somebody's rights as a human being, as a person, to only serve the time that they should. And there's been laws that have been set to say if you've been, you know, you're being accused of something, then this is the time you can be away for without before your trial, before it's found whether you're guilty or not guilty, and then trying to keep the public safe, trying to keep it all under control with the pandemic, as you quite rightly mentioned, trying to deal with the existing backlog that was there, the new backlog that has come up, and then who sits there and prioritises it all and says, right, well, this is actually the cases that we're going to hear first, and it is a big nightmare, Simon.
It is, and of course, the difficulty is.
And I was going to ask you, what do you think the way forward is? That I'm struggling to think of one myself, because, you know, whilst the crisis is still in motion, there clearly is always going to be an added backlog to it. Because unless it can,
there is.
You know, unless it can start operating at full capacity and then some, it's
absolutely
very unlikely to start clearing, and which has the knock-on effect on this kind of topic of custody time limits and how long somebody should be held in custody. But one of the things you mentioned, which I thought was really interesting, and a hope of positivity on this subject, if you like, in the sense that people only serving the time in a custody time limits according to the law, is tighter restrictions on bail. If
yes.
You know, if that is happening and people, you know, people are being told, okay, well, we wouldn't normally be able to give you bail, we wouldn't normally consider that, however, if we can think of a more restrictive bail condition for you that would ensure the court that the public will be safe of you and you're not a flight risk or anything else, then I think that's probably the only light at the end of this tunnel, really.
It is, but of course the difficulty is that the prison population is increasing exponentially anyway. What is not very well known is that actually the coronavirus is rife in many prisons.
Wow.
Because again, social distancing can't be affected when you've got overcrowded prisons. And in fact, the case I'm doing at the moment, I won't name the prison, but there's an outbreak on one of the wings there. So it affects everything. I do think more imaginative use of bail conditions is a very useful way forward. And from what I gather, judges are being more creative and more imaginative about it. And I think that's a very commendable thing for them to be doing. But at the end of the day, it comes back to what I said right at the start, is that the courts have to have regard for the safety of the public. And if somebody is charged with a grave crime, a murder, for example, or child sex offences, then the public would be rightly concerned about somebody charged with that, not yet convicted, but even charged, being released on bail, however tight the conditions were.
Which wouldn't normally happen.
Which wouldn't normally happen.
No, absolutely.
To give you a case, I've got a case due for trial next year. Well, he's a man of good character. It's a domestic murder, but it's very much a circumstantial case. We applied for bail effectively on the basis that his custody time limits were going to have to be extended, and that exceptionally, in the same way that custody time limits can be extended because of the Coronavirus Act, that judges should be more ready to consider bail. Now, it didn't happen in that case, but I do think judges are waking up to the fact that this is one way of solving what actually is an insoluble problem.
Yes, quite.
But it's something they can do. Because, of course, the difficulty is your natural inclination is to prioritise custody cases because people are in custody unconvicted. But the reality is the easier cases to get on in the current circumstances are bail cases, where a defendant comes to court under his own steam. If it's a single defendant case, he's sitting in the dock with a custody officer and his barrister. And so the social distancing provisions are much easier to put in place. Whereas if you've got 4, 6, 8 defendants all in custody, having to be brought to court by prison staff and then accommodated in perhaps 3 courtrooms in the dock, socially distanced, it's almost impossible to manage. But the instinct is to prioritise custody cases because of this feeling of unease about unconvicted people being in prison.
Yes. No, indeed. Well, I have to say, very, very interesting topic, Simon. Thank you so much for your insight on this.
Not at all.
Part one. It's really interesting and it's so underreported.
It is.
It's so underreported, honestly.
There's an awful lot about the criminal justice system, which I think is either misunderstood or not known about. The way that bail and custody works is, I think, one of the least known about areas of the criminal justice system. And actually, as you said right at the start, it's one of the most important.
Absolutely.
Because anybody could find themselves charged with a criminal offence, charged with a serious criminal offence, and sitting in custody for weeks and months when, in fact, they haven't done anything wrong at all.
Yes,
and sadly, there are cases like that. And I think the public should understand how the system works, which is why, if I may say so, podcasts such as this are such an important part of educating the public, because even from people who I have known for a long time and have talked about my work to, they still don't fully understand how it works.
Well, I mean, there's so much of it to understand, even in its current form, but with all the changes that happen, and then you've got the knock-on effect of the changes, and then you've got something like this that happens, you know, a pandemic happens, and the Coronavirus Act comes out, which has affected every area of our lives, across the country. I don't think there isn't a single human being who has not in some way been affected by this pandemic. So, but I say, you know, bring legal learning into schools. And I will champion that one day, I think.
Absolutely.
Because
I couldn't agree more.
We should start learning about this, the laws, and even if it's the most basic levels of the laws, from school education upwards. Because by the time you get to adulthood, you're so busy with work and life and everything else. As you say, you know, people end up in these situations of being in custody, waking up normal one day, and the next day, unfortunate events of life, you know, can happen, I'm sure have happened to many, and you're in that situation and you know nothing about it. You don't understand it, you don't understand how it works. But yes, well, Simon, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you.
And to you.
And I'll say our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.